This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The Voyager 1 spacecraft, to paraphrase Captain Kirk, has gone where no other spacecraft has gone before, to the very edge of the solar system, 11 billion miles from Earth, hurtling through space at 38,000 miles per hour, on course to blast through the bubble that surrounds our solar system, the heliosphere. The Voyager space probes, both 1 and 2, are the most historical and storied and inspiring of spacecraft. Launched in 1977 on a mission to explore the outer planets, you know, the big gas giants, Jupiter and Saturn, they discovered that the surface of Jupiter's moon Io was pockmarked by spewing volcanoes and lava flows. They continued on to Saturn, investigating its rings and moons, snapping beautiful photos. Voyager 2 continued on to Uranus and Neptune. But Voyager 1 shot off, heading up away from the planets and out towards the edge of the solar system. And it just keeps going, and it's now further out than any other spacecraft has been before. Voyager 1 is still diligently sending back reports to Earth more than 30 years after it was launched. So what's it up to? Can such an old-timer with a tiny little radio transmitter, ancient instruments, still call home with useful information? Absolutely, according to research published in the journal Nature this week, Voyager has made an unexpected discovery about the nature of the solar wind at the far reaches of where we would expect the wind to die down. Ed Stone, the grandfather of the Voyager program, is here to talk about it, and he is professor of physics at California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, and he's also chief scientist of the Voyager program and has been at it since 1972. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you. I'm glad to talk with you about Voyager today.
Wow. What is it that makes it such a popular, you know, it's a story of Star Trek, of movies, things like that. What do you think?
Well, it's going where nothing has been before and seeing things that we didn't even know there were to be seen. I think that's really this Voyager story.
Yeah, things about Io and all kinds of places like that that's got all kinds of pictures sent back that we would have never seen before.
That's right, and we're full of surprises. Before Voyager, the only known active volcanoes were here on Earth. But now we know there's a moon of Jupiter which has 10 times the volcanic activity of the entire Earth.
Wow, and where is it right now in relationship to where we are?
Well, it's 11 billion miles out from the sun, about 117 astronomical units, where the Earth is one astronomical unit from the sun. And for scale, Neptune is at 30 astronomical units, about 3 billion miles from the sun. So we're now at 11 and still inside that bubble the sun creates around the solar system.
And how does the bubble get there?
The atmosphere of the sun is expanding outward at a million miles per hour, and that wind blowing outward creates a bubble around the sun. And the size of the bubble is determined by what's outside, the pressure which is outside. And we're now in the final layer of that bubble, approaching the boundary with interstellar space.
And what do you expect to find out there? And what has Voyager sort of puzzled you about it?
There have been a number of puzzles. The current puzzle is the solar wind, which is supersonic at a million miles per hour, goes through, as it approaches the heliopause, the boundary of the bubble, it goes through a sonic shock and slows down because the wind has to turn around and flow down the tail of the heliosphere, which is comet-shaped. And so we are now in that layer where the wind is turning to flow down the tail. And the surprising thing is the wind is really not turning. It's just come almost to a stop, as though it's very close to the boundary, but we don't know how close.
And how far can Voyager go?
Well, we have enough electrical power because of the very robust power supply. It's plutonium-238 with an 88-year half-life of radioactive decay that creates heat, which is converted to electricity. So we know we have enough electrical power to power all the instruments which are on until 2020 and have to start turning them off. And eventually by about 2025, we will have to turn off the spacecraft itself.
How are you able to keep track of something? And what's the transmitter size on?
It's a 20-watt transmitter. So it's a very tiny, very weak signal, and we have to use the most sensitive antennas in the deep space network to capture the data. And it comes back, though, at very low bit rate, 160 bits per second. So we have to have it so slow that each bit can accumulate enough energy so we can detect it.
That's like half the power of my old 300 baud modem.
Yes,
something.
That's right. 160 bits a second. Think of that.
And you can get enough information from that slow rate.
Yes, we sure can. We're measuring the speed of the wind. We're measuring its temperature, its density. We're measuring the magnetic field the wind carries with it. And we measure all the faster energetic particles which are out there, some of which have leaked in from the galaxy outside.
And how do you measure the speed of the wind?
We have, on Voyager 1, we have to do it indirectly. We can, the energetic particles, which are moving much faster than the wind, are carried by the wind. And so when you look into the wind, you see more of those energetic particles than when you look out of the wind, down from the wind. And so that means we can tell the direction the wind is coming from and how fast it's moving.
And
the
what
way we know it has slowed down to essentially it's no longer moving outward radially at all.
And how will you know when you get to the exact boundary layer?
Well, the boundary itself may be fairly complicated. We don't know. But once we get beyond the boundary, the magnetic field outside will almost certainly be in a different direction than that inside. The magnetic field inside has been carried by the wind from the sun and has a particular direction. Outside, the magnetic field has come from the explosion of nearby supernovae and has quite a different direction and intensity.
Ed, you what? You're about 72 now?
I am 75.
75. They're going to let you do this as long as you want to?
I sure hope so.
You say this has got another 20 years of life on board that battery pack?
Only 14 more years.
Only 14 more years. What kind of things, once it gets out beyond, what kind of discoveries could it make?
Well, I think we have some idea of what's outside, but we will for the first time measure directly what the interstellar wind is outside, because that wind has come from an explosion of nearby supernova 5 to 10 million years ago. We'll measure the direction and strength of the magnetic field that has come from these exploding stars. We will for the first time measure the intensity of cosmic rays of low energy which cannot get inside the bubble. And so we have no idea what the intensity of the radiation is outside of the bubble. So we will be able to determine that once we get out.
Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the SETI project, analyzing radio signals for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yes.
Could Voyager pick up something like that when it gets out there?
The radio waves we can detect with an instrument, but they're very low frequency. They're a few kilohertz, a few thousand cycles per second, very low frequency radio waves, which we believe are generated in interstellar space just outside of the heliosphere. And those radio waves we'll be able to detect, but nothing from great distances.
Let's go to the phones for a couple of questions. John in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey there.
I had a quick question. Since Voyager 1 is so far away from our Earth, how long does it take for the data to actually get back to Earth?
It takes 16 hours one way. So when we send a command, it takes 16 hours for the command to get there and another 16 hours before the spacecraft has told us that it got the command.
Oh, wow. That's a lot quicker than I thought it would be.
Well, wait, just give it a few years.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Have a good weekend. Is it on robotic command itself? Does it need to be commanded, or does it have a set of instructions that it carries out?
It has a set of instructions where if we send no more commands, it will fly itself and actually do some fault correction if there are certain kinds of failures until eventually it would, of course, have something go wrong or run out of power. But we send some commands occasionally because we want to do some special measurements. And so we are sending some commands, for instance, to rotate the spacecraft so we can study more carefully the direction of the wind now that it's slowed down to almost to a stop.
Are there any moving parts on it that could wear out over all of these years?
We have gyros, which we use whenever we roll the spacecraft, and so we'll have probably enough power to run those for only about 4 or 5 more years. And so they won't wear out, though, it's just that we will have to not use them because of the power they take. There is an 8-track tape recorder.
Wait. There's an 8-track?
8-track tape recorder.
Yeah.
It still works. But we use it only once in a while, once a week, to record the radio emissions, to look for them. We're not sensing any right now. But eventually we won't be able to play the tape recorder back because we have to have a higher data rate in order to play it back, and we won't be able to receive that data at Earth any longer. Then there are thrusters, which keep the spacecraft pointed at Earth, and we.
Right.
So those are obviously mechanical systems which put out little puffs of gas to orient the spacecraft.
So the radio, though, could theoretically keep going because there are no moving parts on it.
Well, but there is a tube in the radio. It's called the traveling wave tube, and we had spare radio transmitters, and about, well, maybe 5 years ago or so now, we actually switched to our backup radio transmitter because the traveling wave tube had finally just worn out.
Wow. And if you were to look at it, would it look pockmarked and worn? And
oh, space is very empty. The only time that we really detect anything like dust is when we're very near a planet and near the rings of a planet. But out in interplanetary space and interstellar space, it's a better vacuum than anything here on Earth.
How close will it get to another star?
Only a few light years away, and that'll be 40,000 years from now. So space is really empty. So it will obviously get closer to other stars than it will be at the sun at the time, but it will very unlikely it will ever get as close to another star as it is to the sun today.
Were you consulted, or what was your reaction to the Voyager, the V'ger, being used in the Star Trek film?
Oh, I thought it was really a wonderful idea to take this spacecraft and somehow turn it into make it part of a sentient being. Of course, that's science fiction. But it really does, I think, illustrate the impact Voyager has had on the public imagination.
And so then NASA has enough, JPL has enough money to keep following this as long as it needs to.
Well, we are reviewed every 3 years to make sure that it's worth continuing. And so far, we've gotten approval to continue for another 3 years.
Well, good luck to you, Ed.
Thank you very much.
And have a good Father's Day. Have
right,
a good
thank
weekend.
You too.
Ed Stone, professor of physics at California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, the chief scientist of the Voyager program, back from 1972. It's a year after I started it. Remember covering that from the very beginning? It was one of the most exciting missions I'd ever covered as a young journalist. Stay with us. We're going to switch gears and talk about communication in a more modern terms. James Glick is here with his new book, The Information, A History, A Theory, A Flood. And he'll join us to talk about information and take your call. So stay with us. We'll be right back.